This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Thank you for joining us on our Main Street across North Dakota today. And we're going to start our show by talking about an important piece of, well, the way we live these days, health insurance. It's vital to everybody, but it can be intimidating and tricky to navigate. And a recent decision regarding pre-existing conditions could make it even trickier. Today on our show, we'll hear from Mary Wakefield, the former Acting Deputy Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services, and former Congressman Earl Pomeroy, who's also a former North Dakota Insurance Commissioner. They are raising awareness about how pre-existing conditions can impact health care coverage for North Dakotans. The two spoke with Prairie Public's Todd McDonald.
Now, you both are going around North Dakota and talking about a familiar subject for many, the Affordable Care Act. And the pressures that it's under once again.
Well, I was insurance commissioner back in 1985 to 1992. For all the years in Congress that followed, nothing was more instructive to me than being state's insurance commissioner and seeing people struggle to try and get the coverage they needed. We were at that time in a period where if you had a health condition, insurance companies didn't need to write you. And so we had the ironic situation of the more you needed the coverage, the less you were able to obtain it because the insurance company simply wouldn't write it. We had a whole other group of people that couldn't afford the coverage. And we now passed a federal law guaranteed your right to obtain coverage no matter what. If you can't afford the premium, there's help to make it affordable. And we think that these protections are vital. Congress tried to repeal it last summer. They failed. But they're continued to be under assault. In fact, Attorney General Stengem, using state taxpayer dollars, is suing to make it all go away. There are 40,000 North Dakotans that have this coverage. We want to raise the sense of alarm that this coverage is very much under threat today.
And Mary, coming from the rural healthcare arena, we were talking underserved areas before, but this is what we're, you know, the Affordable Care Act was kind of the target audience was rural North Dakota and rural areas.
A big part of it, absolutely, was a focus on helping to ensure that rural communities had access to affordable health insurance coverage. You know, that's especially important for a couple of different reasons. I think one of the most important reasons is because, on average, people who reside in rural areas tend to have more chronic illnesses, like diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure, for example. I had the privilege of directing the Center for Rural Health in North Dakota for about 7 years, and I cannot tell you how many times I had conversations with people, doctors, hospital administrators, and consumers. From my vantage point, the most important voices, people, consumers who could not get health insurance coverage, or if they were able to get health insurance coverage, the cost for it was absolutely skyrocketing. And those were individuals often with those chronic conditions that we see more commonly in rural areas. So you're right. The changes that Earl just described that are being proposed right now have implications for everyone, not just the 40,000 people. That's serious enough. But it has implications for everyone who either has a health condition right now or, unbeknownst to them, 2 years from now is diagnosed with cancer, for example, or with high blood pressure, or has a child that's born with a congenital heart defect. So this is about everybody's access to affordable coverage and the fact that right now it's under threat. We think it's really important that people know that.
So I guess what brings you to out of retirement and coming back into North Dakota?
You know, I've known Mary since college. We've collaborated before on health policy matters. And one of the great things about North Dakota, you know, you get to work with folks you've known forever. So when she was at the Center for Rural Health, I was in Congress. She went on to become one of the truly most influential health policy leaders in our nation when she was deputy secretary. She's not doing that anymore. I'm no longer in Congress. But we're still Earl and Mary caring about health care for North Dakotans. And one of the great insurance companies has an ad that goes, "We know a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two." Well, I think that's how Mary and I feel in light of the public experience we've been able to have. And we want to make sure people understand there are vital protections in the law now that make it much better than it used to be. You can get coverage no matter what. There's help to afford it if you need it. And all of that is at risk. We think people need to know.
And pre-existing conditions have been mentioned on this, always under threat. That's a good number in North Dakota with pre-existing conditions.
Well, that's right. There are estimates that we have somewhere around 300,000 individuals in the state with pre-existing conditions. That's across the age spectrum. And there are thousands of those individuals whose access to health insurance coverage is placed at risk because of the actions that Earl described just a couple of minutes ago. And again, the Affordable Care Act took a major worry off the table for lots of folks. It took the worry of being able to get insurance, not be denied insurance coverage. In fact, it guarantees that regardless of your health status, insurance companies must provide you with insurance coverage, and they cannot take it away. They cannot put caps on it. They cannot limit provide a yearly limit to what they'll cover, or an annual or a lifetime limit to what they'll cover. Those threats to access to health insurance coverage were removed by the Affordable Care Act. That was the good news. The bad news is there are efforts right now that people may not be aware of to take away those protections that North Dakotans have that protect them from insurance companies that may provide them with health insurance coverage but charge them more because they have developed breast cancer or colon cancer, for example. We didn't think that was right 5 years ago or 10 years ago. We sure don't think it's any more right today. And it concerns us greatly because it puts health status at risk. And if I could tell you one more thing that it puts at risk, it puts our hospitals at risk too. You know why? Because what it does is it is a tripwire for people who cannot get health insurance coverage going forward if these efforts prevail. And that means that hospitals and clinics are left holding the bag. They're not hospitals in small towns across North Dakota, I found out, and I sure saw it as a practicing nurse, they'll serve everybody because a person they're serving is their neighbor, it's somebody in their community, so they'll provide those health care services. But what happens when all of a sudden people cannot get health insurance coverage to have their illness treated? That means they're coming through the door, maybe putting a little bit of money down, the best they can do. But the hospital then ends up providing that care in an uncompensated way. A lot of our rural hospitals are already financially vulnerable. What we've seen in states across the country is that for those states that expanded Medicaid because they could, because the Affordable Care Act allowed them to, those states have seen very few hospital closures. For states that did not, have not expanded Medicaid, have chosen not to do that, they've seen numbers of hospitals closing. As a matter of fact, in the last few years, we've seen across the United States about 84 rural hospitals close. You know what? 90% of those rural hospitals are closed. They closed in states that did not expand Medicaid. Now, North Dakota did. We don't want that to be reversed. We don't want our hospitals' financial health compromised because if they leave a community, that affects everybody. It affects the 65-year-old. It affects the pregnant mom in terms of where they go for health care. They've got to drive 60 miles, 100 miles, 30 miles to the next closest town to get health care. So we don't want to turn the clock back to the bad old days. We want to maintain what's good about the Affordable Care Act and work to improve those pieces that would benefit from being improved.
Todd, since I was insurance commissioner, this whole business of health policy has become so political, even within the last few years. Now, when North Dakota took the step to expand Medicaid, and 20,000 North Dakotans have coverage because of that important decision, the leader was Governor Dalrymple. It received a bipartisan vote out of the state legislature. This represented an area where the parties could come together and agree. Now Attorney General Stensham is suing to take it all away. The legislature hasn't reversed course. This is settled law in North Dakota. I think it's just wrong to use taxpayer dollars to sue on a bipartisan agreement led by a Republican governor. I'm terribly disappointed that North Dakota is part of that lawsuit, and I believe that people need to be aware this is underway, be aware of the threat it poses to these essential protections, and they should call Attorney General Stensham, tell him to get out of that lawsuit, or ask every elected official, where do you stand on this lawsuit? Do you think we should take away the protections North Dakota have, that insurance companies can no longer bar them from coverage even if they have a health condition?
What are our avenues here for action? I mean, is it just contact your elected officials, or can we do
first of all
more?
Be aware. You know, sometimes people think, well, now thank goodness they had that big vote last summer. Senator Heitkamp voted against taking that coverage away, and the critical vote cast by Senator John McCain himself, thumbs down on repeal. They might think this is all settled now, and and they don't have to worry about it anymore. Well, in light of the activity that continues, the unrelenting activity, and now another lawsuit, this is still at risk. We think it's important. We don't mean to be Paul Revere here today, but we do want to raise the alarm. It's not settled. It has to be fought for continually. And I think it's wrong North Dakota's participating in a lawsuit to make it all go away. People need to know this is happening.
And I would say that what can people do? I think folks need to ask their elected officials, where do you stand, as Earl indicated, where do you stand on whether or not the provisions of the law should be continued, the provisions that assure that regardless of your health status, you can get health insurance coverage. And regardless of your health status, you will not pay more. You will not be expected to pay more. Because you were diagnosed with cancer, because you were diagnosed with diabetes. Those are the protections that the law has afforded all of us, not just those 40,000 people. So I'd say this is a time for all of us to ask our officials, where do you stand on that? It's a pivot point, in my opinion, in terms of access to health care services for North Dakotans.
Why this abject opposition to a universal health care program?
It's a terribly divisive time in our country. And I just think, for one thing, when we passed the Affordable Care Act, it was terribly controversial. I think no small part of the reason I lost my reelection was because of the vote I cast in favor of it. There was a lot of misinformation, including, you know, most of our state has coverage that they like and they get it at their place of employment. I think many were concerned that that was going to be taken away. We had seniors worrying that somehow Medicare was going to be adversely affected. Well, now we're almost 10 years into this law, we are 10 years into this law, in fact, and people see it didn't affect – costs are still going up. It's not the Affordable Care Act's fault. In fact, what the Affordable Care Act has done is get coverage to those who otherwise didn't have it. 40,000 North Dakotans have coverage today that wouldn't have had it otherwise. That was a vote worth casting. That was worth losing an election over. This is terrible. This is life-saving health insurance coverage. Now, I don't want to have – the coverage for that group of 40,000, or coverage for the broader group of North Dakotans that may in the future change employment, be looking for insurance, have a health condition they might have developed sometime in the future, and suddenly be barred from coverage. The point is the law protects those who need it now and protects all of us because none of us know what the future may bring. These are protections that represent an essential step we needed to take as a country. I was insurance commissioner back when we didn't have these protections. We don't want to go back to those old days.
Mm-hmm. Any closing comments, what a person should take away from our discussion today?
We have a beautiful state. I've got a family wedding this weekend. We share things as a community. I think North Dakota at its very best is a place that we care about one another. We live out our lives here on the High Plains. We certainly understand how important rural hospitals are. To farmers across our state, people living in small towns, we understand how important health care is to all of us. And we have within our family experience, either within our family, our friends or families, people with health conditions. We know that, goodness sake, we shouldn't allow insurance companies to stop them from getting health insurance because they got a health condition. They're the ones that need it the most. So what I think the takeaway is, let's celebrate the protections that are now in law by defending it against those who would take it all away. North Dakota should not be using taxpayer dollars to sue to take away coverage from 40,000 of our people who have coverage because of this. I think that Mary put it right. Every elected official, everyone on the ballot this coming fall should be asked, do you favor the litigation to take away the protections of the Affordable Care Act? I also think pressure ought to be placed on the Attorney General, Wayne Stengem himself. Why in the world do you want to make all this coverage go away and with nothing left to replace it? I really think we've taken some important steps as a state. We don't want to throw it in reverse and leave them all behind.
I'd just leave you with one, what I think is an important example, an illustration of the difference that some of the provisions of the Affordable Care Act are making. And that's to go back to Medicaid expansion. And the good news that North Dakota was one of those states that chose to expand Medicaid. I absolutely do not want to see that turned back. What we know, and I'll give you one reason why, what we know is because for states that expanded Medicaid, data are showing us clearly now that individuals in those states are being diagnosed with, for example, cancer much earlier in their illness than individuals who are diagnosed with cancer in states that did not expand Medicaid. What does that tell us? It tells us that people are getting access to services, and they're getting access to services, in some cases, life-saving services sooner. As a nurse, I know you're generally much better off if you're diagnosed at stage one with, let's say, colon cancer, breast cancer, than if you're diagnosed at stage three or stage four. It makes the care more stressful, the treatments more expensive for later diagnosis. So that's just one concrete example of the difference that this law is making for individuals and families across the country. Conversations to improve it, I'm all about. Conversations to take away the protections and guarantees that it currently provides, I think can be devastating to families, individuals, and also to the healthcare infrastructure of healthcare of communities.
You raise the point of repeal and replace. And over the past 10 years, we have never heard replace with what?
You know, they had a tremendous difficulty last summer trying to craft a bill that did replace. Well, the Congressional Budget Office itself said, well, you can pass this new bill, but 22 million Americans will lose the coverage they now have under the Affordable Care Act. That number, 22 million, taking coverage away from that many families, was rejected by the Congress. They said, we're not going to go there. Now people are trying to do it just by lawsuit. They couldn't pass the bill to repeal. Now they want to do it by lawsuit. It's wrong. It sued this twice already and lost in the Supreme Court, but now we got a new Supreme Court justice being put forward. There's a lot of uncertainty that continues. In my opinion, they had their day. It was on the floor of the Senate. They lost the vote. Let's now work together to take what we've got and make it better rather than try and throw things in reverse and take away protections that people have that need them.
That's been kind of a mantra since the beginning. It's not the perfect plan, but it can be made better.
Exactly right.
Yeah, we've never claimed perfection. But it was a worthy effort, and it actually has helped a whole lot of people. With no question, Todd, people are alive today that wouldn't have been had this law not been placed in the books. North Dakotans are alive today that wouldn't have been if they didn't have this protection. Let's now make it better. Let's deal with these extraordinary costs, prescription drug costs, so many other issues that need to be tackled. Good sake, we could do it so much better if we worked together instead of ending this war on health care. Let's accept the fact that all Americans deserve access to health care and help with the premium if they can't afford it and work from there to make it better.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Todd.
Thank you.
Mary Wakefield, the former acting deputy secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services, and Earl Pomeroy, who served North Dakota in the U.S. House of Representatives and as state insurance commissioner. They spoke with Prairie Public's Todd McDonald. Coming up on Main Street, StoryCorps.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by North Dakota Living, celebrating more than 65 years of featuring the great people and places of North Dakota and proudly serving the members of North Dakota's electric and telephone cooperatives. And by the Bush Foundation, investing in great ideas and the people who power them in Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota. Learn more at bushfoundation.org.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. And today we have another StoryCorps excerpt. In a war-torn country, life is fraught with hardship. Paul and Lydia Zondo grew up in Liberia during the First Liberian Civil War, a conflict that killed a quarter of a million people from 1989 to 1997. Earlier this month, they visited the StoryCorps mobile recording studio in Bismarck to share how they overcame difficult childhoods to find happiness together.
It was hard for us because my parents had 7 living children. I was 12 years when I started supporting myself. In 2000, we moved to Monroeville. Our parents sent some of us to relatives for us to stay with people, to go to school.
And I remember there was no food and there were no jobs. I was so small, I couldn't work. And we were many, we were 6 of us. We were homeless. We ate leftover food. We slept at friends' house. We didn't shower for days sometimes. There's a lady who thought that we had better chances in Monrovia. So she advised my mother to send us back to Monrovia. But my mother did not have money to do so. And I still remember vividly that she had to beg the drivers to carry us to Monrovia, which was about 200 miles. It wasn't long before we started seeing things getting better. We started going back to school. Our dreams and hopes to travel was being revived. Friends, churches, pastors, we started improving our English. Just the basic things you do when you find yourself in a hopeful environment compared to a place where there is no hope and there is no future. We tried to come to the States. We were naive then, thought we could walk to America. When I came to the States, it was a fresh air for me. It was New York. It was Bronx, New York. And there were buildings falling apart every weekend. And then I left and went to Baltimore because I was afraid that I would die. But it was in July. Beautiful, the weather was nice. The trees were red and yellow and green. The sun was up. Life was good. Those years were the best years of my life. Years of innocence. Years that I could have tackled any dream and make it come true. I was 145 pounds. I didn't know anything about cholesterol. I didn't know anything about hypertension. I didn't know anything about diabetes. I didn't know anything about cancer. You're just at your prime, you know. I felt that way. And then after a while, Baltimore was not too impressive. Moved to Ohio, Minnesota, Sioux Falls, Nebraska, Missouri, Montana. Then you guys joined me in Montana. And we moved here now in Bismarck, North Dakota. Home is a place where you prosper. Home is a place of safety and security. Home is a place where you want to stay. Where you want to die, where your dreams are realized, where everybody knows your name, where you can let down your guard, you can lay your worries at ease.
Home is a place where you have peace of mind. Home is a place you have joy when you are home. You feel comfortable, you feel relaxed, you do things that you want to do, eat whatever you want to eat, you go places wherever you want. Home is a place that you are free to move about.
We've heard a lot of stories of people from different parts of the world, from like Afghanistan, Iraq, Sierra Leone. And we've always wanted to tell our story, especially as Liberians. Our culture is an oral culture. They don't have a written language. And there's not much written now or before. So most of the cultural facts, the history, the legend, are not carried on forward to the next generation. And so it's just as though they were not living before. We're speaking Bassa and speaking Mino.
This interview was recorded at the StoryCorps mobile booth at the Heritage Center in Bismarck. That booth will be there until July 27th. And you can reserve your spot by going to prairiepublic.org. StoryCorps is a national initiative to record and collect stories of everyday people. Excerpts were selected and produced by Prairie Public. Our thanks go to Basin Electric Power Cooperative of Bismarck for helping sponsor the StoryCorps visit to North Dakota. Ashley Thornburg edited this excerpt. She'll be in Bismarck Thursday for a StoryCorps event where she'll share some of our stories. That event is free. It's open to the public. It starts at 6:30 on Central Time Thursday evening at the Heritage Center. Coming up on Main Street, we'll talk with Teo Basquiat about his program for Humanities North Dakota called Think Outside. And we'll talk with the general manager of the Bismarck Larks, John Bollinger. First, the news with Danielle.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. On a 3-2 vote, Fargo City Commissioners tabled the long-talked-about pilot plan that would allow food trucks on public streets. Currently, some food trucks already operate downtown on private properties with permission from property owners. Commissioners were in general agreement on trying the expanded plan this year. However, there were too many sticking points. That included a request to allow food trucks throughout the city and not just downtown, and limiting where the food trucks could be parked. Businessman Randy Thorson said it would be unfair to allow the food trucks to park in front of his downtown restaurants.
You know, I don't think it's fair. I think we've been down there. We've been doing this job. And I don't think I need to have them across the street from me. I just don't think that what you've asked us to do, what other commissions have asked us to do and invest in downtown Fargo, we've done that.
Commissioner Dave Pepcorn said with too many questions, it was best to table the proposal indefinitely.
I think we should just hit the pause button and make sure we have everybody in the room, the restaurant owners and the truck vendors, and make sure we do this well and do give it another shot next, because it's the middle of the summer. But, I mean, we have to do this. You have to do it right. And there's no rush. There's no food truck emergency.
The pilot program was to last through the end of October and would then be reviewed to determine if it should be made permanent with an amended ordinance. And officials with the Historical and Cultural Society of Clay County are taking a look back at the drinking culture of Scandinavian Americans.
We thought it was an interesting addition to some of our recent research for wet and dry, exploring, you know, the history of alcohol in the region. So Skull Scandinavian Spirits takes a longer view and looks at you know, the histories of beer and aquavit, especially in the Scandinavian countries.
Cultural Society spokesman Devin Whitey says aquavit, or water of life, and beer made their way into Scandinavian culture in the 1500s, first for medicinal purposes, then recreational.
So the exhibition has a lot of fun talking about how early Norse people said that the god Odin actually was the first brewer. And aquavit actually started out as a medicinal tonic and started flavoring it with different herbs and so forth because the distilling process wasn't particularly delicious at the time. So this is how you get things like caraway and dill showing up in what's in aquavit, which is otherwise, you know, vodka pretty much, grain alcohol.
Whitey says one interesting thing he learned along the way is the backstory on the popular drinking toast, Skull.
If you were having a toast or, you know, cheering with friends, you're essentially just saying bowl or cup. It's a funny toast. But yeah, that's all it means, bowl, cup. It goes back to that tradition of sharing beer in a bowl communally.
The Skull Scandinavian Spirits Exhibition opens Tuesday of next week with a free cocktail reception. It will run through October 8th. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, joined by Teo Basquiat. He's with our microphone in Bismarck in our studio there. And Teo is going to talk about an event that's coming up this Saturday at Harmon Lake north of Mandan. It's a Think Outside program. Teo, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Doug.
We'll get into what this Think Outside event is going to be, but give us a little bit of your background first.
Oh, my background is professionally with the Humanities Council. I was a board chair, but spent 6 years with the Humanities Council, and about 12 years here in Bismarck, associated with Bismarck State College as associate professor of philosophy and religion, and now I'm an adjunct philosophy and religion professor for them online.
And you're pursuing a Master of Fine Arts in Creative Writing at the University of Wyoming.
That's right.
Where you also work with Wyoming Public Radio, just so we can give kudos down the road there.
Keep it in the Prairie Public family, right?
Very good. Well, let's talk about Think Outside. What prompted this idea?
I think it comes from my love of the outdoors and adventures and feeling like North Dakota has all these incredible, beautiful places that I really wanted to invite people to come out and enjoy. And I wanted it to be more than just we're out camping or enjoying some kind of activity. I wanted to bring a little bit of my passion for conversation, discussion, ideas, and partnership with the Humanities Council was a great fit.
So Think Outside this Saturday from 10 in the morning until 12:30 at Harmon Lake, north of Mandan. It's free for those people who want to take part. So describe to our listeners what will happen.
So we'll gather at 10 o'clock, and there's a little assignment that people should maybe take a gander at before they come out. It's reading an essay by Annie Dillard from her very classic book, Pilgrim at Tinker Creek. And it's the one short essay called Seeing. And we're going to spend just about an hour in small groups and large group discussion of what does she mean by seeing? What is she talking about in her adventures around Tinker Creek? And then, inspired by that discussion, I hope, head out onto the lake, either stand up paddleboarding or kayaking as people choose, and enjoy the afternoon and the beauty of Harmon Lake.
So do people bring their own paddle boards or kayaks, or are they provided?
Yep, either bring your own, or there's a little kiosk there that rents that equipment as well for people.
Now, your plans changed. You originally were going to be going camping and kayaking along the Missouri River, but I guess the river wasn't accommodating.
Yeah, river had other plans for us. I'm sure that if we could make sure everyone was an expert kayaker, we were going to head up to Cross Ranch Friday night, have a campfire and discussion, and then do the river from that boat dock up there down into Bismarck here. And not only did Cross Ranch have to, you know, pull their permission or use of the boat dock, but I wasn't all that sure, you know, we would be able to get out of the river once we got down here. Didn't want to drive down to Pierce, South Dakota to bring somebody back out of the water. So
this was going to be a much longer event, I take it.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, hopefully next year, because there is quite a kayaking community here in Bismarck. So hope to draw people from Bismarck and around the region maybe for next year.
You mentioned you chaired the Humanities Council board for a few years. How did you pitch it?
How did I pitch it?
Pitch this idea, Think Outside.
Well, Brenna Gerhardt, the executive director, in her crafty ways, we put our heads together and actually brought the board out to Elkhorn Ranch last October and had them experience kind of a mini version of this. Just did the short hike into the ranch site and had a short presentation discussion. The board immediately saw the merits, you know, to their credit, like that this could be something pretty special that we could do in North Dakota for the public.
Well, who can participate?
This is for lifelong learners. So not for families necessarily. We don't have programming geared for, you know, younger children, but certainly like high school age all the way up through, you know, 90s, 100s, we'll take you.
How many can you accommodate?
There's no limit on this one.
Any sense of how many have signed up so far?
Because we just had to, you know, we were watching the river so closely, seeing if maybe it would cooperate. We just did the switch on Monday to Harmon Lake. So I have no idea at this point how many people have responded.
And how can people sign up or participate?
HumanitiesND.org. And we'd just like to, you know, it's free, so there's nothing that you have to, you know, pay or at the point of registering. But we would like to know who's coming up there, and there's also an important liability waiver that needs to be signed.
Because you aren't going on the water.
That's right.
Okay. Well, you've done this before. Can you kind of give us a sense of how people respond to these kinds of, you know, thinking out loud in some cases?
We've had such a fantastic experience with the events that we have done so far. And people, you know, that are attracted, I think they're maybe skeptical at first about like, oh, it's camping or it's being outside. And of course, it's been very warm. This past weekend, we went out to Elkhorn Ranch for the two-night, three-day kind of retreat. And on Saturday, it was 102 out there. So, you know, we had our adventure for sure. But the conversations have been so stimulating and engaging. I just couldn't ask for anything better so far. The participants easily become lifelong friends of mine. You know, it's that kind of bonding that I think can only take place in nature, you know. So they've been great. And, you know, we have not only the Harmon Lake event, but we have two shorter events in the East coming up the last weekend of July. And that's July 28th in the Pemina Gorge, day hike in the afternoon. And then we have another one on Saturday or the 29th, Sunday, at Fort Ransom. So both of those are hiking and conversation kind of events in the afternoons.
And we've got a conversation coming up with a fellow with the Bismarck Larks, the general manager there, John Bullinger. And coincidentally, there's an event for Think Outside that is actually at the ballpark on Sunday, July 29th. They'll be talking about the Negro League ball players and the civil rights movement. What was the connection and unintended consequences? Because Bismarck actually has a history in that regard. So another Think Outside event as well.
That's right. We're really trying to get a number of different events in communities across the state. So I hope as more and more people, you know, come out and try these events, there might be some folks in various communities where we haven't been yet that might say, hey, we'd like to have one of these out at our wildlife refuge, or we have this neat little hiking trail that, you know, we think would be great for birding, and we can put them on the docket for the next time around.
Are you the person they should contact to pitch an idea to?
Certainly me, certainly anyone at the Humanities Council as well.
Teo Basquiat is with Think Outside. You're also written up as an adventurer, a trail runner, a bike packer, and scavenger. Would you like to elaborate on any of that?
I just have very much enjoy being outside, doing longer trips on some of the fantastic trails we have around the nation. Scavenging, my friends well known that I love to find treasures in dumpsters and put them to good use, creative reduce, maybe reuse. Maybe that's my artistic side coming out. So.
Now, when you teach philosophy, is there a particular area of philosophy that is of greater interest to you? I'm thinking of logic, ethics, those kinds of things.
So because I've taught with a community college, I've done, you know, more general introductions to those subjects, and I still do teach logic in a general philosophy course. But personally, I'm most interested in ancient Stoics, you know, the Marcus Aurelius, the Senecas, the people who were advocating philosophy as a path to wisdom, the path to a life well lived. And I think that's as good of explanation as I can come up with for my love for these Think Outside events, too. I just find that it connects us with our humanity, gives us a culture and a kind of a civilizing influence, interestingly, prepares us to live our day-to-day lives to the fullest.
Well, Teo Basquiat is leading a Think Outside group on Saturday. It starts at 10 in the morning, runs till 12:30 at Harmon Lake, north of Mandan. And if you'd like to find out more about it or sign up, go to humanitiesnd.org. There's no cost, but they'd like to know who you are. Teo, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Coming up next, we'll talk about the Bismarck Larks.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. Thanks for joining us. And also joining us right now, John Bullinger. He's the general manager of the Bismarck Larks. He joins us by phone from Bismarck. John, thanks for being with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
You are a pretty new team up this part of the nation, the Northwoods League. Give us a little background here. What's the Northwoods League, and how do the Bismarck Larks fit in?
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, this is actually in the middle of our second season this year in Bismarck. But the Northwoods League is actually celebrating its 25th anniversary of being in summer collegiate baseball. So to give fans a little background, I know we get asked all the time, you know, what level is this? Who are these players? And if you all know the game of baseball, there's obviously the majors. Then there's, AAA, AA, Single A. Those are guys that have gotten drafted out of college and are hoping to go on and play in the big leagues. And then underneath that is really two kind of leagues. The first one's called independent baseball, which, you know, you have the Fargo Redhawks and the St. Paul Saints and some teams that folks in this area are pretty well aware of. Those are guys that are professional ball players. They've played in college. You know, either they didn't get drafted or they were drafted, played in the minors for a few years, got cut, and they're just trying to continue to play their career to go on and get to the next level, but they are not affiliated with a professional team. Where our league is called Summer Collegiate Baseball. So our guys are actually a little bit younger. They still actually have to be in college. So they are a freshman, a sophomore, a junior at a Division I university somewhere around the country. They play their college season, and then they come up to play in our league, and they play 72 games in 76 days. So it is a marathon of a season. It's actually more games than the Major League Baseball schedule. But they are coming here because they really want to get, you know, looked at by scouts, get developed, get, you know, more talented, and hopefully fulfill their dream of playing in professional baseball someday. So, you know, we always joke, and the talent on the field is just awesome. I mean, you're going to see phenomenal athletes, you know, future MLB players, potential all-stars. But off the field and around the field, what we sell as the Larks and, you know, minor league baseball is the fun. You know, we're about the fan experience. Whether we lose by 10 or win by 10, we want to make sure fans are having a great time. Fans of all ages, baseball fans or not, they come to the ballpark for just a great night out and they get to have some fun.
So these are collegiate players. Can they be paid?
They can't. So that's part of that is part of, you know, again, why I guess a little bit part of the business model with this is, you know, these guys cannot be paid. They actually pay to play in this league. Now, it's a nominal fee of $250, which goes to the league's foundation. And what we do for them is provide, you know, travel, equipment, food, every single thing that goes on in terms of expenses for them. They stay with local host families. So there's really no expense for these guys when they're here. But again, they really look at this as, I guess you could say, a summer internship. You know, the players in this league really have a great shot to move on to the next level. As mentioned, we've had about some MLB athletes that have played in this league. I think to date we have just under 200 guys in the 25-year history of the league that have made it to the major league level. Max Scherzer, who you've probably heard of, Chris Sale, I think they're both starting the All-Star game again for Major League Baseball. They both played in our league when they were in college. So, again, these athletes come here, and while they can't be paid because they'd violate their NCAA amateur status, they are here because they really, really want to get developed and get better and fulfill their dream of playing pro ball.
Well, Bismarck has quite a history in baseball. How did this new team get started there?
Yeah, so again, it was pretty interesting learning and being new to the community. My wife and I moved here again 2 years ago to start the team. But yeah, we were unaware just how much history baseball, you know, has here in Bismarck Mandan. I mean, the days of, obviously everyone knows Satchel Paige having some of the best semi-professional teams, or really any team in general, the 1930s, which what they had at Bismarck Municipal Ballpark, and then from the Pards to, you had the Dakota Rattlers to the really rich history for the Governors and the Legion and the amateur baseball here in town. But really, you know, with our league, how it started was the Northwoods League was always looking to expand to the Dakotas. If you look at the footprint of our league, we have 20 teams now, so we're actually the largest summer collegiate baseball league in the country, as well as having the most fans for attendance. Now, most of the teams are in Minnesota and Wisconsin. We have some outlier teams in Michigan, one in Iowa, one in Thunder Bay, Canada. So the league is always looking for great new markets that can, you know, we can bring our level of baseball and family entertainment to. Now, Bismarck we were in conversations with them at the league level for almost 7 years, I believe, but the biggest holdup was having a ballpark that could really fit the needs of our operation. Again, for us, it's not just, having bleachers and open up a concession stand and you have hot dogs and hamburgers. If you've been to one of our games, I mean, you can tell it is, you know, full-on scale entertainment. I mean, we have a major concession operation, so we really needed a great venue to come, you know, bring this league to. And so when the ballpark renovations at Municipal Ballpark happened with some community partners, obviously the Bismarck Parks and Rec, that really opened the door in the conversations to get us in here. And, you know, within 2 years, I know I knew we'd be coming out here in the fall of 2015. We began planning, got a lease signed, and then we were actually on the ground with a full front office staff, a team name and everything in the fall of 2016. So, you know, crazy how everything comes together, but there was a lot of interest for the league to be here. I think Bismarck and the city officials and parks really wanted to have another professional-esque type, you know, higher level of competition team here, and the ballpark and its partners really helped make that relationship happen.
And you're a real baseball entrepreneur. You and a partner operate three teams, two others
we
besides
do,
the
yeah.
Larks.
You know, I told myself in college, I said, you know what, you have to do this job thing, you know, for 40, 50 years of your life, so I might as well pick something that I really, really enjoy. And I got really lucky because I got a job that I get to do that with. So, yeah, you know, I went to school. I played baseball, but I love baseball. But I went to school. I studied entertainment management. So I really wanted to do something that not only I could be in the game of baseball, but do something that I felt made a difference in people's lives every single day. And by doing that, using fun and, you know, entertainment and, again, the game of baseball and the love people have for it, I really fell into a career that I'm able to kind of live that mission and you know, again, make a difference in people's lives each and every night. So, you know, I started off, I was in Kalamazoo, Michigan, where my now business partner and I started the Kalamazoo Growlers team there. And we ended up having a really successful first season, broke some attendance records in summer collegiate baseball, built up the business and the team there 3 years in, and then got the call that we were going to expand to Bismarck. And the league said, hey, John, you guys are doing a good job. We'd like you to come out here and kind of be our face and bring your team. And, you know, Brian and I at the time said, well, gosh, you know, we work really well together. Why not keep this band of knuckleheads together to keep, you know, keep creating these teams and bringing this type of product to the, you know, the communities that we serve. So again, now my business partner and I decided let's do it together. So we again operate the team here in Bismarck, and he's over there running Kalamazoo and another team that we operate in Battle Creek, Michigan.
Are you scouting for players? How do they get to you?
Yeah, so I get that asked all the time, you know. So my title is general manager, but you believe me, you never want to hire me to recruit talent for your team. They would be a very bad team. So what I do is I hire a coach. Thank goodness, we have our manager here, Sean Ripe, who's a associate head coach at a university in Wisconsin. But I hire a coach, and our coach kind of full time around the year recruits players. And so how it works, you know, because to give you a little bit more background, there's about 12 other summer collegiate leagues in the country. Okay. Now the Northwoods League is right up there in the top. I mean, there's the Cape Cod League, which if you're a baseball fan, you've probably heard of, been around 100 years, fully funded by Major League Baseball. They get a lot of blue chip prospects, but the Northwoods League has built such a great reputation that this really is one of the premier places to play. And so, you know, college coaches, first off, want their guys here. You know, if they have a freshman who's starting behind, like for example, we have a guy, Jacob Nesbitt, on our team from the University of Arkansas. They were in the College World Series this year. He's a freshman. He'll probably go on and start at Arkansas next year. Their head coach says, hey, we want Jacob to go get hits, go get repetition, go see great competition. We're going to send him to the Northwoods League, and he's going to come back a better player. So, you know, our coach is calling those college coaches to really sell Bismarck as the place to go. But also college coaches are calling us because they know what the Northwoods League is, and especially with Bismarck selling out all the games we've done. You know, we've got a good reputation in our first 2 years of taking care of the players, having great host families. So it really becomes a destination guys want to play in. And, you know, that's kind of how it works. So,
well, it sounds like a lot of fun. It's time to watch some ball at the Bismarck Municipal Ballpark. John Bollinger is general manager of the Bismarck Larks. Thanks for spending some time with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dakota Date Book is next.
Support for this program is provided by North Dakota Horizons, North Dakota's state magazine, showcasing North Dakota's quality of place, its abundant resources, and people. Learn more on Facebook and at ndhorizons.com.
This is Dakota Daybook for July 17th. The Automobile Association of America, today known as AAA, was established in 1902 to encourage automotive travel. As part of the organization's efforts, they published maps in 1905, followed by a hotel guide in 1917. And in 1920, they added a driver safety program. The AAA regularly sponsored road trips to advertise the joys of automobile travel. On this date in 1913, the Williston Graphic newspaper reported that drivers on a AAA tour had arrived the night before, covered with dust and grease, hot and tired, but happy. The drivers and their passengers were on their way from St. Paul to Glacier National Park. They began arriving in Williston at 4:30 in the afternoon, with most making it by 6, though a few who suffered from mechanical breakdowns or flat tires straggled in later. As the cars pulled into town, they parked in the square in front of the Great Northern Passenger Depot. Drivers checked in with the event organizers, then got busy making adjustments to their vehicles in preparation for the next day's drive. Some were traveling the entire distance and competing for prizes. Others had joined the adventure at stops along the way, including Devil's Lake and Minot. In all, 30 cars pulled into Williston. At that time, there were very few convenient roadside motels, something modern drivers take for granted. The AAA had devised a way to deal with that problem. A special train arrived in Williston about the same time as the cars. The train pulled onto a siding where it offered dinner in the dining car and 9 sleeping cars as lodging. The train included Railway President Lewis W. Hill's private rail car. He spent time in Williston visiting with the drivers and the onlookers who had assembled to view the large gathering of automobiles. Hill also had a car entered in the competition. The travelers resumed their journey early the next morning after a hearty breakfast. They intended to maintain what the newspaper called a hot pace, driving 154 miles per day. Today's Dakota Daybook was written by Carol Butcher. I'm Errol Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from the North Dakota Humanities Council.
Wednesday on Main Street, horticulturist Ron Smith will be live on our show. He'll take your lawn and garden questions on the air if you call our toll-free number during the show. Write it down now if you'd like, 888-755-6377. That's 888-755-6377. Or you can email us right now or anytime. And that email address is mainstreet@prairiepublic.org. Horticulturist Ron Smith is with us on Main Street Wednesday. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.